Well, welcome to Kindred. This is Lisa Reagan, and today I am here with Stephanie Mines, and we are sitting with the baby that has been birthed after, oh my gosh, I don't want to kind of think about how long this book took to come into existence, but actually it's your whole lifetime, I think, Stephanie, because it represents so much wisdom. It is the wisdom of a lifetime, and that you have been paying such close attention to healing and the connection between how we are in our inner climate and how this is connected to our outer climate, and that you are able to capture this moment. And I do feel like you have, and it's not an overstatement to say that your voice has captured something to chronicle where we are right now that is going to be really hard for most people, but I would say even most artists and poets, to capture what you've been able to capture and present in this book. And I look forward to unpacking that a little bit with you in this call. So
thank you so much, Lisa. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So maybe just tell us a little bit about your background so everyone understands the breadth and depth of your experience and insights and what you are bringing into the great position, medicinal poetry for the Anthropocene.
Well, as you know, Lisa, I am just fresh back from a 3-month immersion in Aotearoa, New Zealand, where I have the great honor of being asked to write the biography of Mata Farihoka, who is a matriarch, a rangatira, of the renowned Parihaka Marae, an epic marae in Taranaki, on the North Island of New Zealand, which is the birthplace of nonviolent resistance. And I come away from this experience with a deep respect and awe, really, for the voice of the feminine and for the voice of the mature feminine, what are known in Aotearoa as kuia, the elder women, the crone, the evolved female elder who carries a perspective on humanity that is of incredible necessity at this time. So I feel a sacred obligation to put forth the wisdom of the kuia, of the mature feminine, as a guiding light in a time of darkness.
And that is what is presented in The Great Physician. And I would like for you to speak a little bit to your background, because some of the stories, I'll just tell our listeners, I took some of your regenerative health classes and the Tara approach. And I got to tell the class, it was like, well, I just read Stephanie's collection of poetry, The Great Physician. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to understand these completely different systems of thought, like regenerative health. But I told the class, you get to the other side of reading The Great Physician, you're going to know what regenerative health is. And it isn't something you can package up in a study or a research paper. It is an experiential, very deep dive, but into such this connection that you're able to make between inner and outer climate, working with abused women over the years. There are poems in here about working with tissue and feeling the trauma trapped in the tissue. And what does that feel like? And what does it feel like to reconnect our tissue with our original brilliance and bring forward some of this healing? Mm. So there's so much, Stephanie, just to go through. I can't tell everyone that we were able to put into this very, it's only like 112 pages, but the poems that are in here, many, many poems and photos that are in here, are so deep and rich and beautiful. They really do. There is an arc there that the reader will go through from the beginning to the end. And it is a healing arc, I felt.
Yes, and I think you're naming the poles of the arc. I'm actually working right now on a post that will talk about poetry and regenerative health, the relationship between poetry and healthcare. So I come from a time of darkness, and I think trauma survivors like me, women who have survived sexual violence, domestic violence, we know about these times. These horrific times when all seems lost, I lived in that. Growing up in a home where there was great disturbance caused by illness, caused by addiction, caused by intergenerational conflicts that came ripened in the lives of children who bore witness to how adults failed them. Not purposefully, but instinctually, because of unresolved generation upon generation of shock and trauma. So that's what I come from. I come from an impoverished, struggling background, not a background of privilege or opportunity. I was discouraged from being uniquely intellectually curious, and my aspirations to be a writer were looked upon askance as ridiculous and purposeless. Why would anybody want such a career? Why would anybody want to spend their time writing? So ultimately, I became a scientist as a compromise, you might say, because I did need to produce more income than was possible as a poet, even though I did have a period of success in San Francisco, which I loved as a published poet, as a National Endowment recipient, as a performing arts poet. I performed with musicians. It was absolutely delightful for me, but it was erratic and not income producing. So ultimately, I went back to school after a master's in creative writing and embarked on a surprise journey for me, which was into neuroscience and neuropsychology. And I was motivated largely by the suffering in my family. I wanted to understand it. I have always had quite a present and demanding curiosity, and I'm grateful for that. So that curiosity led me to understand brain development. I did my doctoral research in traumatic brain injury, which was what my father was struggling with and was why he was so violent. And this resulted in more and more investigation into the human nervous system and human development. And that is really what led me to create the TAR approach for the resolution of shock and trauma. And understanding, as you have indicated, the inner and the outer components of trauma, I also created climate change and consciousness. So it really is a wounded healer's journey.
It is. And this collection of poems walks us through that journey. And you get to see from the beginning where you started, your connection with the ancestors, with your ancestors, with trees, mother trees, and this unpacking of not just the trauma, but almost simultaneously moving towards what you call this original brilliance that we have. It's a remarkable journey that this breadth of trauma and tragedy and crisis and connecting it to where we are in the world right now is such a state of feeling crushed and how an overwhelm, just this constant state of overwhelm most of us are living in with it. But the perseverance and there's this ferocity of this living force that comes through you, and it does in person too. I love it, and I feel that, and it does feel like, wait, if we were to really believe, why is it so hard to believe that we could, for instance, put our hands on our bodies, as you talk about in the Tara approach, and in the book, we're going to put our hands on our bodies now and learn to heal ourselves. And we can do this because we're part of this living system and this life force, and this original brilliance is our birthright. And it seems like this is the real goal of the book, is it's and the collection is moving us gently up, lifting us up and out of what is, acknowledging reality, but moving us towards what is also true, which is our capacities for healing.
Beautiful. Once again, you've named the points on the spectrum that come together in my life. And the ferocity that you speak of, that I saw mirrored in Mata Farihoka, the Rangatira of the Parihakamanai, that is delivered as a towering force, but with such gentleness and welcoming that I have to see that that is the way forward, and that this is possible when women access the wisdom that has accrued within them. So I encourage women, and I encourage myself, to reflect deeply on our lives. When I was a child, I knew there was sickness in my home. I knew that I was in a sick place, and that the word you used, crushing, is such an important and palpable word. I was crushed by the sickness around me, and I knew that there was an antidote. And as a little child, in my nonverbal, instinctual way, I prayed for regenerative health. I prayed for healing for the whole family. And in retrospect, I see that I was the healing. And that healing is in my creativity. And that creativity is my original brilliance. And the way that creativity moves in everyone is the way forward. That awakening to that original brilliance is what I promote. It's what I'm doing with everything, with my poems, with my regenerative health MA PhD program, with the Tara approach. Is I am not so much talking about me and what I discovered. I am trying to incite the discovery of those to whom I speak, those I reach. I am what I am longing for is this awakening of original brilliance in everyone. And I feel with absolute certainty that when that original brilliance is awakened organically, we're going to be out of this mess. That we will be a force that will overcome the stupidity that is taking us down right now. We are in a developmental crisis as a humanity. We are caught in puerile behaviors that are heartbreaking to witness. But when it's curious, because what I'm talking about is the original brilliance that is embryonic. But it is the reclamation of that original brilliance that allows us to be the stewards we are born to be. And so it's a very individual process. I can't, give you the bullet points, do this, do this, do this, do this, but I can say, I will stir the soup of who you truly are until it is such a delicious elixir that you will be nourished to the core and you will just do it.
Oh my gosh, that, yes. can you maybe take us a little bit deeper, because there are poems in here where you do talk, you speak from the embryology piece. I'm somebody who's old enough to remember when the whole self-improvement movement and all that started coming around. People wanted to pretend like human consciousness began when you were an adult. And I know people in birth psychology fields have had a very tough struggle trying to show that, and no, infants and fetuses are a continuation of human consciousness, and what happens here with us and to us, how our coming into being in this world is relevant. That's been a little uphill battle. I should also mention that March is Birth Psychology Month, so we're right on time here with this discussion. So maybe just unpack a little bit the embryology piece so people don't miss it.
So here's a poem called Who Are You? You are the one who folded and unfolded in rhythmic undulations, perfectly timed to orchestrate your dance of being. You are the one who differentiated your cells, separating and reforming ectoderm, mesoderm, endoderm. You are the director of organogenesis. You are the initiator, the one who understands everything and therefore forgives everything. You wield the sword of apoptosis. You wield the sword of apoptosis, remorselessly transitioning, discarding, evolving. You are the compass of the sacred directions, dorsal, ventral, cranial, caudal. You are the germinator, the one who begins the great migration, the ingression through the primitive streak, the voyage through the womb. You enticed your mother to build a placenta for you. You enticed your mother to build a placenta for you. To surrender all her gateways. And we complied. You are the one who does not wait because you know. You are the one who does not wait because you know. You act.
Oh, Stephanie, thank you. Thank you. That's it. You know, that just
That's embryogenesis.
there's our March Birth Psychology Month celebration. I'm gonna get that out in the world. Thank you so much for sharing that piece, that continuum, the human consciousness, the connection that you make. And here you go from this tremendous epic arc of here at the very beginning to your ancestors, to connecting with the trees as your ancestors. I love the quote about being face planted in a forest, and there's your shamanic journey tripping over roots and finding yourself on the forest floor. I'm just again hitting the highlights, not just to entice everyone to buy the book, but to try to even imagine the journey that Stephanie is going to take us on, from beginning to end, in the book.
The connection with the ancestors and with the trees as ancestors, again, was deeply reignited by my time in Aotearoa with the Kuya. The recognition that we come from a long line of courage, we come from a long line of trust in human existence. And honoring that ancestral drive for being by protecting our ancestors, whether they be the trees, the earth, the water, the children, protecting and sustaining lineage. This is the highest value in Maori tikanga or practice, and being there with Mata Farihoka and her family on the Parihaka Marae reignited how we are one, how we are unified. And that is a message that I convey in everything that I do. It is the antidote to this ignorant darkness of polarization and othering that is unnatural to us, is an aberration in terms of the evolution of human consciousness and the nature of our neurological unfolding. So as a neuroscientist, I understand how brain development is an unstoppable journey of resilience. That's what's intended. That's what's programmed into human brains, is resilience, not the static, stuck, repetitive insanity that we are subjected to and that we have been colonized into believing is our destiny. So I'm 80 years old and I celebrate that. I celebrate the way in which I continue to evolve, how my intelligence is not fated for destruction, but is aiming and securely moving in the direction of who I really am, more and more and more and more, absolutely not less and less. So I promote that, you know, not as just a wellness program. Sign up for my wellness program and you too will have longevity. That's not what I'm promoting. I'm not actually even interested in longevity, but I am interested in vitality and making a contribution from a place of truth. And so I am, yes, I offer resources for how to do that, but the only true resource is actually original brilliance. And that is the fusion, I think, of poetry and healthcare. And, you know, the healthcare system is incredibly deficient of poetry.
It is. And to that point, would you feel up to reading The American Waiting Room?
Oh, yeah. And all of my poems, let me say, all of my poems are true stories. And this one is an absolute true story, just really a journalistic report of something that happened to me while I was in a physician's waiting room. The round-faced woman turns to me and says, "My baby sister is dying. I'm saving up for a hot air balloon ride. It's on her bucket list. There's nothing they can do about it. My hand goes to my heart. You are a wonderful sister, I say. The woman pulls out her phone and shows me a photo of her sister pouring a vodka martini into her feeding tube. I'm retired now, she continues. Then she points to her red swollen ankle and says, I had surgery there, but since then I can hardly walk. On the other side of the room, a mom is shushing her agitated son who keeps hitting his head with his clenched fist. Mom adjusts her body to hide her child, glancing furtively towards the others in the room. The receptionist returns to her computer screen. Her long fingernails are painted green with shamrocks. It's St. Patrick's Day. They click rhythmically as she types. The scent of a microwave meal wafts through the cold air. Scenes of a bombed out Ukrainian city flash on the silenced television screen above us and then transitions to a newscaster immaculate and perfectly attired, seated behind an S-shaped acrylic desk in a room that rotates as if on a turntable of tragedies. I find my neutrality in the room. It is a room I share with all of humanity. I identify the midline of my being. I am awash with grief and rage, grief and rage, grief and rage. In my silence, I unite with everyone. The round-faced woman, her sister, the mom, the receptionist, but especially with the boy, obscured by his mother's body, his muffled, uncontrollable sounds renew my commitment to my destiny.
And there it is, your destiny, your connection to children. You emphasize that over and over again. The book is dedicated to the children of the future.
When I had my children at home, I could feel the earth shake. And this wasn't about me alone. It wasn't about my children alone. It was about women. We deliver life. That's why we are the leaders for this time. Everything I do is for children, born and unborn, for the future of humanity. I'm not going to let this go without doing my job. And that job is the job of a woman, to bring forth life.
Yeah, I feel compelled, Stephanie, to paint some context around what you just said. And before I do that, I'll tell our listeners, I'm going to talk about something triggering. So zip up your energy field or skip forward about 5 minutes. But here's what I want to paint for a context around what you just said, which is right now in the United States, we are the most dangerous place in the world to have a baby. And the maternal morbidity rate is higher than all other, not just developed nations, but a lot of developed nation, undeveloped nations as well. And then the other statistic that's come out recently, I just talked to Adrienne Griffin at the Maternal Mental Health Leadership Alliance about, and we do have an article up on Kindred if you are looking for resources on this article. But the leading cause of death for new mothers in the United States now is suicide and overdose. And when I called Adrienne, I said, I don't remember seeing this. Is this new? And she said, yes, the maternal morbidity review committees who drill down into these kinds of data drill down far enough, apparently fairly recently, to pull out the statistics and not just, and this is the really triggering part, not just the fact that women who are new mothers are committing suicide, but they're committing suicide the way men kill themselves, which is through lethal means. So while we have women attempt suicide more often than men, men succeed more often because they use more lethal means. And that is what new mothers are using right now in this country. And so there's your trigger warning. I'm now going to stop talking about that if you fast forwarded. And there are resources on the on kindredmedia.org for this. You'll see it'll come right up. This is March 2024. And Adrienne Griffin's article with lots of resources are right there for you. But this, to me, I can't believe it's not a headline in our country where now we have forced birth, and now we're taking. I mean, we already had taken off the table so many options for just basic women's health. But this, I just want to say, when I speak with you and when I read your work, not many people can go there with us. I feel like you are somebody that has the wisdom and the strength to take us into these dark places and point out the light that's still there and what is still possible and help us understand how do we get here and how do we get out. Because most of us hear these things and become paralyzed and too despondent to even think about it. We just have to, disassociate or something and crawl out, not go there. But I'm completely serious. When I read your collection and when I read your work, I do feel your that this guide in you, this wise guide that you've been able to bring forward. And I know you say you're 80 years old. I'm like, we don't have that long for everyone to become the wise crone, as you call yourself, of the crone speak, Substack. We need to get there pretty quickly. But the book does, the poetry book, because it comes into this different part of our brain that I know the statistics are so numbing, we can't even hear them anymore. The studies are so hard to take in. But poetry comes in a different part of our being, and it seems more nourishing and makes this digestion of what is true and real, and then what is also true and real right beside of the dark piece possible in poetry. And you have done that, I believe, in The Great Physician.
I thank the darkness that spawned me because it educated me. And I have met the darkness in all the people I work with, men and women, mostly women, but men as well. I have met the darkness. I mine for the darkness. That's my name, Stephanie Mines. I mine for the darkness because I know that's where the illumination is. And it is in the denial of the darkness that we get into trouble. And once again, I want to reference Mata Farihoka and the Maori people because I don't know that their model is as widely known as it should be and as it will be when I write Mata's biography. But they are a people like my people, for whom genocide was an intention. The Maori were meant to be eliminated, eviscerated, and their land confiscated, and yet they have risen. And in the biography of Mata Farihoka that I am writing, I will show how it is the Kuya that are the guts of that resurrection. And that resurrecting capacity is within all of us. And as we face this threat that is there, that is true, that is breathing down our necks, the threat of annihilation with which I am familiar, it is the original brilliance that will arise within us as it has in the bodies of women who have been abused, that force of nature, which is aligned with the natural world, which is intended to be partnered with the natural world, will be the dominant reality. That's what I am invested in. That's what I believe in. And that's where my attention is. So maybe now's the time to read the poem that you had referenced before. That you wanted to hear the texture
Oh
of
my gosh.
oppression.
Yeah. Thank you, Stephanie.
I am, of course, reading from The Great Physician, published by Kindred World Media. In the bodies of the women who come to me for healing, I feel the texture of oppression. Strings of coagulated holding back in musculature. Poison pellets of self-rejection inserted deeply into connective tissue. Taut tendons entwine bone like strangulation vines, emitting venomous inflammation. I touch the ectoderm of centuries of agony. I touch the ectoderm of centuries of agony. The mesoderm of shock and the braced membranes of endoderm defiant and impenetrable. Fluids meant to flow are backed up, filling avenues of expression with sediment, making them pathways of refusal. Latched back doors to the heart long to swing open, to be free, to release the pent-up spontaneity, the pent-up spontaneity that has been dammed. The time has come, my sisters. The time has come to disbar the court that silences us from within. The time has come, my sisters, to disbar the court that silences us from within. The time has come to detoxify the texture of oppression. The time has come to detoxify the texture of oppression. Detoxify it from your flesh and come out from the eddy of repetitious restraint. We can do this. We can irrigate with rivulets of permission. We can irrigate with rivulets of permission, with waves of validation and recognition, the brine of wisdom that is the song, the poem, the art of the crone. Invoke, supplicate, she who dwells in our wombs, she who knows how we give birth to ourselves.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Is there anything else you would like for our listeners to know about the great physician or you?
Well, I want to say that I am actually quite happy that this is a relatively slim book, because we are all so busy and so distractible that, because this is a volume, I love the size of it as well, that you can slip into your computer bag and take with you anywhere, and within a matter of seconds, change your day or your life by reading one of these poems. So I love the size and the shape of it. I want to thank you, Lisa. You are the midwife of this book. And I want to thank Kindred, because Kindred is like Mata Farihoka. It doesn't give up. It keeps telling the truth that people don't always want to hear. And that's Mata Farihoka and other Kuya embody this. Mata in particular, which is why I'm writing her biography. Keep going, keep telling the truth, and it doesn't matter that people resist you or turn away from you. Just keep going.
Yeah, there's really no other direction to go once the door is open. I was talking with somebody the other day about the whole worldview shifting experience. It's not like you crack the door and peek in. The door is blown off the hinges and now you know. So what are you going to do now?
I love that. I love that image. The door is blown off its hinges, and
Is
now we
blown off
know. Yeah.
the hinges. And I feel like this book is has that capacity. And I would encourage I'm a fond of bibliomancy and picking up things and just opening up to a page wherever. But this book has a actual healing arc to it from beginning to end. And you'll see as you go through Stephanie's story and how she connects all of these differences. She says the poles on this epic journey and arc come together so beautifully. It is an experience to read it from cover to cover. So thank you for that, Stephanie. Thank you for bringing this beautiful book to us. And it is medicinal poetry for the Anthropocene. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm so glad to be your friend.
You too.